Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call the meeting back to order. Ms. Cordial, would you be kind enough to call the roll?
Here.
Board Member Goff.
Here.
Board Member Flores.
Here.
Board Member Masnak.
Here.
Board Member McClellan.
Here.
Board Member Rinken.
Here.
And Board Member Schroeder.
Here. Thank you and welcome to all of you. Glad to see so much interest in this project. This morning we're going to talk about accountability clock recommendations concerning Montezuma Cortez School District RE zone. I can't get the mic closer. But I can get myself closer to the mic. But I want to remind you guys, this is how I lost my papers yesterday. Sorry, folks. Colorado State Board of Education will now conduct a hearing in case number 17-AR01, the accountability recommendations concerning Montezuma Cortez School District RE1. Under the Education Accountability Act of 2009, if a district receives a priority improvement or turnaround rating for more than 5 consecutive years, the State Board of Education must direct an action to the local Board of Education. Montezuma Cortez RE1 will enter its 6th year of being accredited with priority improvement July 1, 2017. During this hearing, the board is acting in its capacity to hear the recommendations of the commissioner and the state review panel pursuant to 22-11-209(3). The commissioner and her staff are here today to present their recommendation. The district will also present and will share their report. The State Review Panel, an independent body of education experts, has issued a recommendation regarding Montezuma Cortez that is a part of the hearing record and is included in the board packets. In the case of Montezuma Cortez, the State Review Panel conducted a site visit and document review in 2015 and recommended that the district continue its management partnership with the University of Virginia Turnaround Program. The State Board's consideration of the matter shall be limited to material submitted by the parties and maintained in the record proceedings. At the hearing, each party shall have a maximum of 30 minutes to present its report. Board members may not interrupt with questions during this time. Board members will have an opportunity to ask questions after both parties have completed their presentation. The hearing will proceed as follows. The department shall present its 30-minute report. The district shall present its 30-minute report. Ms. Cordial will let you know when 5 minutes are remaining in your presentation. Following the presentations of both the department and the district, the State Board shall have the opportunity to ask questions of both parties for a time period not to exceed 2 hours. The State Board may ask one or both parties to submit proposed written final determinations for the State Board consideration. The State Board shall consider and adopt final written determination at a subsequent State Board meeting. At this time, I would ask the department's representatives to introduce themselves for the record and begin their presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Katie Anthus.
Nicole Monet, Turnaround Support Manager.
Brenda Bouch, Accountability Specialist.
Alyssa Pearson, Accountability and Performance.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board, participants here today. Before we dive into Montezuma Cortez's particular circumstance and recommendation, just let me offer just a few thoughts on the department's process for this. This recommendation you're seeing before you and any subsequent recommendations are based on our staff expertise, many of who are trained in and have turned around schools themselves in previous jobs. Their time in these schools, along with the external review and feedback presented to you as well, in addition to my visits and many, many visits of our school turnaround specialists. What you have before you is our absolute best thinking over all of this, combining all of this information together. We think that this is our best thinking in terms of what is best for the students in these unique schools and districts. So So now I want to start our presentation, and I want to offer thanks to Montezuma Cortez for coming all this way, Superintendent Hockness, and Board President, this is going to be hard, but Board President Schoenmeyer?
Schoenmeyer,
okay, forgot one N. And Tina King Washington, the K-12 Curriculum Director for Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, thank you. Carol Mahasey, Director of School Improvement for Montezuma Cortez, and William Robinson from UVA, the Management Partner. We have been working in partnership with Montezuma Cortez over a good period of time. We have an excellent partnership with them. I visited several months ago to learn in depth about the improvement strategies they are putting into place, as well as seeing action. We visited all of the schools in question and visited classrooms and teachers across the district. Cortez has been working with Nicole Monet, one of our turnaround support managers, and UVA, and we have seen great improvements over this time frame. For example, Kemper Elementary, since working with UVA and implementing the strategies that you saw in the plan with their management partner, has come off the clock and increased 3 rating levels since they started working. So we see this as excellent progress and an excellent start to this work. Lori Hockness is a relatively new superintendent, though she has been with the district for many years. She has a deep knowledge of and commitment to and trust from her community. She is deeply personally committed to the improvement of the school district, and she is now, as superintendent, in a great position to affect district-wide change. During my visit, along with others on my team, we have consistently seen urgency by the district and school leaders towards implementing the strategies outlined, and more importantly, we have actually seen that progress translate into student achievement gains over these past 2 years. We see a better environment for students and a better chance of students meeting the goals of achievement and growth in post-secondary workforce. We recognize there is still much work to be done and have been working in partnership to push the district and the management partner to accelerate these initial excellent progress steps that we see. So we see that the district now needs to scale up these strategies to other schools and districts in the system. And given my visit, the staff's work with them, and the management partner, we do believe they will get there. For these reasons and additional reasons the staff will present to you, I am recommending a management pathway for Cortez. This partnership has seen great progress, and we have evidence from districts across the state who have schools that have worked in management partnership that this external support and accountability can really make a difference and can increase the achievement of students, and we have seen across the state as well as in Montezuma Cortez the increase in performance levels for schools. With that, I will turn it over to Brenda Bouch to give you some more details on our rationale for this recommendation.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Board. Thank you, Commissioner Anthes. Montezuma Cortez is set to enter its 6th year of being accredited with priority improvement effective July 1st, 2017. As such, the State Board is required to direct actions to the local Board of Education prior to that date. There are schools in the district that are on the accountability clock. However, none are at the end of the clock at this time. Therefore, this recommendation does focus on that district level action. As Dr. Anthes stated, the recommendation from the commissioner is for a management partnership. And this recommendation is based on a comprehensive review of student data, leadership, culture, academic systems, the Unified Improvement Plan, and a history of grants and supports that the district's received over the past few years. The commissioner's visit to the district also informed this recommendation, as did many staff visits and conversations with district leadership. The department took into consideration the state review panel's recommendation, as well as the district's own proposal for a management pathway. And this slide shows that the state review panel also recommended a management partnership, and the district has set forth a proposal for a management pathway as well. So in this instance, all 3 recommendations are aligned. And we will go through during this presentation how we came to this recommendation. And at the end of the hearing, we are asking for direction from the state board on which pathway the State Board is recommending. While there is not a vote that will occur at the end of the hearing, we are looking for that direction so that we can draft a written determination. We'll give a little bit of background on the district. You will have a chance to hear from the district themselves, but wanted to give a little bit of information. The district is located in Southwest Colorado and serves just under 3,000 students. It is a diverse community. There's two Native American tribes that the district serves. And as Dr. Anthus mentioned, the superintendent has been with the district for a number of years, although was just named superintendent last year. The district has had some persistent challenges in elementary level growth and achievement in both subject areas, in English language arts and in math. And so two of the district's elementary schools are currently on the clock, as well as the district's alternative high school, which is the Southwest Open Charter School. The district also authorizes two other charter schools, Children's Kiva Montessori School and Battle Rock Charter School. The district's middle school, Cortez Middle School, and the high school, the traditional high school, Montezuma Cortez High School, both had insufficient data ratings this past year due to parent opt-outs. And one other school to note on this slide is Kemper Elementary, which did move from turnaround in 2014 to performance in 2016 due to the efforts the district's put into place at its elementary schools. And this was particularly notable because the school had been in year five of the clock prior to that, so they'd been on the clock for five consecutive years before making that jump to performance. And additional data is available in the commissioner's report. I just wanted to make note of that in both the report itself and in the appendices. CDE has been an active partner in the turnaround efforts for the past 3 years. The turnaround support manager, Nicole Monet, who's with us today, and other CDE staff, including myself, have been able to visit the district in person and meet with teachers and with staff and district leadership and have a chance to meet with the board as well. And through this engagement, CDE's focused on providing feedback and technical assistance around their improvement efforts. We've also provided some direction and support around their unified improvement plan. And we had the opportunity to review early drafts of the management plan. The district is a recipient of the Pathways Early Action Planning Grant, which really allowed us to help see the early versions of the management plan, provide feedback and revisions. And Commissioner Anthus was able to take a tour of three schools and meet with the district as well, so we were able to get an understanding of the district through that. I mentioned the Pathways grant. The district has also applied and received a variety of other grants as well over the past several years. The district has really strategically applied for these grants and matched the grants up with the needs of its schools. So, for example, the School Counselor Core Grant and the Expelled and At-Risk Student Services Grants are targeted towards their secondary schools. And they have had historically struggled with graduation rates and have seen a 20 percentage point increase in graduation rates in just the last few years as a result of some of these supports and initiatives. The Connect for Success Grant and the Tiered Intervention Grant are focused more on their elementary schools. The TIG Grant is for Manaw Elementary. It's a very comprehensive and intensive school improvement grant, and Manaw is currently the furthest along the clock, so that's an appropriate grant for that school. And Connect for Success helped, for example, Mesa Elementary, which is also on the clock, and the staff and leaders were able to visit high-achieving schools and learn best practices from them. I'm going to turn it over now to Nicole to review the systems and conditions.
Thank you, Brenda. Good morning. My name is Nicole Monet, and I am a turnaround support manager with the Office of School and District Performance. Prior to joining the department, I was a teacher and school leader for over 10 years in priority improvement and turnaround schools. I've worked with Montezuma Cortez over the last three school years, supporting district leadership and the school leaders of three of the elementary schools, Mesa, Manaw, and Kemper. I have worked with them to set goals and set action steps around those goals. To support, evaluate, and provide feedback to schools and districts, our office uses our own expertise as turnaround leaders and our tools like our turnaround conditions rubric. The conditions are research-based and for districts can be divided into five different categories: leadership and staff, school culture, academic systems, district support and flexibility, and board and community relationships. We have used these conditions regularly with Montezuma Cortez to provide feedback and evaluate progress. The district has put several supports in place to improve the capacity of building leadership and staff. These supports are the results of UVA program requirements. The superintendent meets weekly with principals to set individual growth goals and reflect on progress. These goals could be new goals or next steps on previously set goals. For example, during one weekly meeting that I observed, Superintendent Hockness was coaching a principal on the next steps that the principal needed to take to move from being a reactive leader to a more proactive leader, an essential skill for our turnaround leaders. Each school and the district develops rigorous 90-day plans that sets priorities and goals. The plan informs all decisions from calendaring to staffing to budget. Leadership uses these plans to check on progress in implementation. Each principal attended the UVA Turnaround Leaders Program. Past trainings has included short cycle planning, systems development, and change management. I have attended these trainings alongside the principals and can attest firsthand to the high quality of the trainings. CDE has recommended that Montezuma Cortez focus on creating a strong teacher recruitment and retention policy. Recruitment and retention have been a challenge in the past for the district, given its rural setting and resources. Working with UVA, the district responded to our recommendation with a robust proposal that far exceeded our expectations. The proposal includes the expansion of existing partnerships, the engagement of new partnerships, and innovative and creative ideas with existing resources, including mentoring and creating a joyful culture that people want to continue working in. For example, the district is expanding partnerships with the Betcher Teacher Residency, Fort Lewis College, Teacher Match, and the BOCES and CEI to recruit qualified teachers. Montezuma Cortez is working on improving teacher retention by providing mentoring and support for new teachers, enhancing social and community support, expanding benefits, administering teacher satisfaction surveys, and using the results to drive change and create a dynamic district and school culture. Our second condition for turnaround is school culture. In schools and districts with strong culture, students and staff believe that nothing is more important than students engaging in learning. Students and staff work hard, model strong character, and strive to do their best. School culture is not motivational speeches, but rather repeated practice and the development of learning habits. We have seen a dramatic change in the schools in Montezuma Cortez over the last several years. Students are engaged. School-wide systems are in place. Surveys from parents, teachers, students, and other stakeholders are used to drive decisions in the school. In terms of next steps, we recommend that the district and school leverage the relationships and trust that they have worked so hard to build to ensure a consistent and rigorous learning environment for all students in all schools. Our third condition is academic systems. Academic systems include curriculum, instruction, and assessment. Through UVA support, the district and teacher leaders develop strong, standards-based interim assessments. As a result, teachers now have a deep understanding of standards and grade-level expectations that did not previously exist. The district sets aside time each week for teachers to meet and plan instruction for the following week. With training provided by UVA, teachers now use data to guide their planning during the weekly meetings. All of the elementary schools use Success for All, a research-based literacy curriculum that, in addition to the partnership with UVA, resulted in two of the three elementary schools showing progress on the school performance framework. For next steps, we recommend that the district ensures the same level of implementation of the literacy program at all of the elementary schools, and the district continues to refine the district-created assessments. Our fourth condition is district support and flexibility. Our turnaround schools need supports and flexibilities to meet their unique school settings. Examples we look for are prioritized hiring, prioritized funding, and flexibilities from district policy that might hinder a school's growth. Montezuma Cortez has strategically applied for grants and resources for each of the schools based on each school's need. For example, the Connect for Success grant that Mesa Elementary applied for and was awarded highlights practices in high-achieving schools and implementation of those practices, and the tiered intervention grant for Manaw, which is more of a whole school reform model. Based on recommendations from UVA, the district has prioritized its low-performing schools through additional support and personnel, like the grant example that I just spoke about and the weekly meetings with the superintendent. For next steps, we recommend that Montezuma Cortez monitors the progress of its key improvement strategies district-wide to ensure consistent implementation at all of the schools. Our final district condition is board and community relations. This condition measures how the school and district engages with parents, families, and community members, and how aligned the local school board and the district are in their vision for student success. To support this condition, we recommended that Montezuma Cortez participate in a training focused on building board capacity to set effective policy on improvement and provide oversight on the implementation of these policies. We have heard positive feedback on the trainings and have seen evidence when we have attended the local school board meetings. The superintendent and local school board have a common vision for supporting students that drives the work. In the fall, Brenda and I attended a board meeting where the district presented its state assessment results to the board and the beginnings of this pathways proposal. The board asked good probing questions and was a good balance of accountability and support. Everyone had a common goal of improving outcomes for students. Next steps for the district are to increase community and parent engagement. The district is already working on this by planning a marketing and engagement campaign to provide messaging to the community around academic goals and the importance of parent engagement in a child's education. Over the last several years, we have provided feedback on all of the previously mentioned conditions to the district. Montezuma Cortez and its leaders have consistently asked for feedback on next steps. They've consistently asked for relevant training opportunities and have welcomed support. And as a result, we have seen improvement in the district. I will now pass it back to Brenda to go over conditions for success.
Okay, thank you, Nicole. Based on that thorough review of systems and conditions, we've identified those next steps that we believe the district needs to take, and we set forth the district's pathway plan needed to include these conditions for success to really instill confidence that they will be on the right track for coming off of the accountability clock. So the department identified the following conditions for success that we believe will improve outcomes for all students. Those are around talent management, academic systems, district systems of support, and the parent and community engagement piece. So specifically, as Nicole mentioned, around talent management, recruiting and retaining those high-quality teachers, but also building from within so that if there are leadership transitions, the district has teachers and leaders that are able to step in and quickly fill those gaps. Around academic systems, it's continuing to refine the practices they put into place around data-driven instruction and instilling a culture of high expectations in every classroom in every school. For district systems of support, the district has been a key partner in monitoring the implementation of their improvement strategies, and we would encourage the district to continue to play that role and to ensure that fidelity of implementation across all schools. We also believe it's necessary for the district to continue to engage their parents and their community at large around these improvement strategies, understanding what the district's doing and why, and to really ensure that there's high expectations for all students. And the district has acknowledged this as an area of need, and this has been one of their focuses in their Unified Improvement Plan, as well as in their pathway proposal. An additional rationale for our recommendation is that we believe the management partnership is a mechanism for the district to achieve those conditions for success. that the proposed partnership is an extension of current improvement efforts, and we've seen early successes from those efforts. So that's why we would believe that the continuation of those efforts is the right step at this point. We've seen improvements in instruction, culture, and district systems. As Nicole mentioned, a just very intense focus on turnaround, in particular in these past 2 years. So for these reasons, we believe that if the plan's implemented with fidelity, that we can see improvements in student achievement and outcomes as reflected in the school and district performance frameworks. An additional rationale for our recommendation is the district's plan itself, which we have had the chance to review and to provide feedback on. And so as the plan stands now, it meets the expectations that we put forth on the management rubric. And the plan is well developed, it's thorough, and it provides details and a scope of work around those key areas that they need to focus on, including the talent management, the academic systems, the district systems, and community engagement. So the plan focuses on those areas that the department believes is where the district should be focusing their attention on. And we find that the partnership with UVA will provide the targeted professional development, and more importantly, the accountability for the district to deepen implementation of current practices and to really take that to the next level so that all outcomes for all students are improved. We did take into consideration the State Review Panel's report, which also recommended a management partnership with UVA. The State Review Panel cited significant changes in the district as a result of their current work with UVA. They found the district to be effective on 4 of the 5 measures and developing on 1. And these are the criteria that the State Review Panel uses for every school and district that it visits. There are 4 categories. There is a highly effective category, but most of the schools they reviewed received the highest was an effective category. So this is a very positive review from the State Review Panel. Both the State Review Panel and CDE did take into consideration the other pathway options that were available, and we thought very deeply about whether those would be appropriate and why they wouldn't be appropriate in this case. For the innovation pathway, the department believes that there aren't district or state policies that are currently preventing schools from implementing improvement or turnaround efforts. The district already grants a significant amount of autonomy to its schools. They don't have a collective bargaining agreement in place. And so for that reason, we don't see the innovation pathway as leading to a significant amount of change that is needed right now. It could be an option for an individual school. So for example, for Mana, which is farthest along on the clock, and they are, as we've mentioned, participating in the TIG grant, and so that is could align nicely with an innovation pathway. However, that wouldn't be a district-level pathway. That's not what we feel would be the right pathway for the district-level strategy. For similar reasons, we don't find that chartering an individual school would really address those systemic district needs. It is also very difficult to identify high-quality charter operators with proven turnaround experience that are willing and able with a viable business model to operate in rural areas. I know that rural districts are constantly seeking that, but it is difficult to identify. And more importantly, we just don't believe that an additional charter school, the district already has 3, we don't know that an additional charter school would solve those district level problems at this time. We don't find that the district needs to close any individual schools at this time. There's not capacity at other schools to serve displaced students, and we do find that the district's on the right path in its improvement efforts, as evidenced by Kemper, which moved up from turnaround to performance, and other schools that have seen improvements as well. We are not recommending district reorganization. The district serves a very large geographical area, and it's likely that reorganizing the district would lead to longer bus rides and higher transportation costs and be a disservice to families. And again, we see that the leadership in place right now is on the right track. The State Review Panel has a quote up on the slide which said that they've really had this laser-like focus on turnaround, and CDE staff have corroborated that and find that to be the case. I will now turn it over to Dr. Anthes to conclude the presentation.
Thank you. So as you've seen from our presentation, we feel that we're very confident in the management partnership for Montezuma Cortez. We believe that it will address the key conditions needed for success. We believe we've already seen some of those successes starting to happen. We think the district's proposal is well thought through, the scope of work is well developed, and the benchmarks and accountability is built into that. We believe the partnership with UVA will provide the development, but also the ongoing accountability to ensure that the plan is acted on and to have the supports necessary. We do feel confident that the district is on the right track to come off the accountability clock within the next 2 years. And we believe on the next slide, as we've worked with the district, we have remained in partnership with them, and we will remain involved in the monitoring of the progress of the district. We will receive annual reports from the district and UVA regarding the implementation and the agreed-upon scope. We will continue to support the district and its schools through a turnaround support manager and the implementation of various grants that the district has. The district is willing to provide annual updates to the state board until the district comes off the clock. And they've also set and discussed with us that the board may request additional progress monitoring written through the written determination if you see fit. So with that, we'll conclude our presentation.
Thank you. I've lost my place. Next, please, we'd like to hear from Montezuma Cortez. Ms. Hawkness, are you the organizer here?
I'm the organizer.
Would you be good enough to introduce your colleagues?
I would be privileged to.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairwoman Schroeder, members of the Board of Education, and Commissioner Anthes. My name is Lori Hawkness, and it's a privilege to come before you as the superintendent of Montezuma Cortez School District. To my right, I'd like to introduce Dr. Jack Schutemeyer, who is the Board of Education President. To my left, I have Carol Mahasey, and she is our Director of School and Innovation. Next to Carol, we have Tina King Washington, who is our Ute Mountain Ute K-12 Director that is a very strong partner. And then next to Tina is Dr. William Robinson from the University of Virginia, who we're proposing to continue our partnership with them in the turnaround efforts. I would also like to introduce a few people in the audience today. I'd like to acknowledge the dedication that we have in our district with the five members of our Board of Education that is present today. Dr. Schutemeyer will be introducing them. We also have our high school principal of Montezuma Cortez High School, Dr. Jason Wayman. And we have Ms. Donita Jones, who is the principal of Minot Elementary School. We also have another partner today in the audience, and that's Alicia Whitehead, who is a member of the Ute Mountain Ute Education Department. So I just like to acknowledge and thank everyone for coming and supporting our district today. I would like to thank the board for the opportunity to come and present to the board one on our turnaround efforts, but also our plan to continue the turnaround efforts through the pathway to not only get our district off the clock, but quite frankly, what the conversation we're having today is basically the floor on getting off the clock, but our plans for improving achievement so we attain the ceiling, which is where our students deserve, and to ensure that all our students graduate and be able to continue their post-secondary education career as they choose. So I'd like to start the presentation today with a snapshot of our students, because I always like to bring it back to the students and the student learning, because that's why we got into education, and quite frankly, that's why we're before you today, is we not only serve our district, but we serve the students in our district. So to give you a little context about our district, we are privileged to have a very diverse group of students in our district. We also serve a high percentage of students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. In our three largest elementary schools that were referenced in the commissioner's report, Mesa, Minot, and Kemper, we serve a range of 76% to 86% of students that qualify for free and reduced. We realize that as a community that education is extremely important to our community because it breaks the cycle and improves the education and the lives of our students. To give you a little continued district context on a broader scale, Montezuma Cortez County ranks the last among the largest 25 counties in Colorado on indicators of child well-being. Our community is heavily impacted by poverty. 27% of our students are living in homes under the poverty level, which is $24,600 for a family of four. Our early childhood risk indicators include births to mothers who did not complete high school at 19%. We highlight this today because we realize that, and we know that education is the key for our students, and that is our focus in improving the education for our students. One of the other components that we will have that we'll be embedding into our presentation today is we realize that as a district, one of our very large goals is bridging the community with the district, so we've created some specific strategies to strengthen our relationship. Now I'd like to transfer over and talk about the student achievement, which obviously is why we are here today. Before you is the district performance framework for this year. I would like to highlight that we have seen growth in our elementary levels with the increase in achievement of improvement. Two of our three elementary schools on a turnaround improved in their accreditation ratings. Kemper Elementary School was in turnaround year five and received a performance rating this year, which we highlight and celebrated. And then also Minot Elementary School was on turnaround and it increased in accreditation rating to priority improvement. While we're pleased with the progress that we're demonstrating and moving forward, we realize we have a lot of challenges and a lot of movement. We need to move forward in a rapid amount of time, and we're very committed to that to ensure that we have a high-level education for all of our students in Montezuma Cortez School District. I would like to transition forward and talk about our post-secondary workforce trends. The Montezuma Cortez High School has improved the accreditation scores in every subject, exceeding college readiness benchmarks in English, and is 0.4 from meeting state expectations. The Montezuma Cortez High School is exceeding the state PSAT scores in reading and math, and is approaching in math. This is due to a variety of wraparound services that we have implemented over the last 2 to 3 years. As we look at our post-secondary workforce trends, one of the obvious objectives we have is to have every student graduate from Montezuma Cortez High School and also from our district. We come before you today with a celebration that we have increased the MCHS graduation criteria by 20%. We've increased our Native American graduation rate by 20% in the last 5 years. And then we have also decreased the dropout rate for our Native American students by 4% over the last several years. We are committed to continuing to improve our dropout and graduation rates, especially for our students at our alternative education campus, which is Southwest Open Charter School. The way that we've addressed that is we've created a very strategic, strong partnership with them to help them move forward with their graduation of their students. The district has committed to clear performance targets of the pathway plan. Those clear performance targets are before you today in the presentation. Meeting these goals will ensure the district will be off the clock in 2 years. However, for us, these goals represent a floor, not the ceiling, and we will continue to strive for excellence up and beyond this plan. I know one of the questions that will be before the board will be, how do we ensure that the continued work with UVA will move the district forward? I have been in the district and served in many positions in the last 22 years, the last 15 as an administrator, both at the building level and as a district level. I've had the privilege to work and lead this turnaround effort. And I can say that due to the partnership with UVA and the strategic planning for not only at the school level but at the district level has created the system that we need to move the district forward. Being a district of priority improvement, it does range a sense of urgency. And so if you look at our previous unified improvement plans, You will note the feedback consistently from CDE is that we need to narrow our focus, because what we were trying to do was to address all the many challenges in our district. And what I equate that to is as a very broad river that is very shallow. We were skimming the top in the success for our students. With the UVA program, what we have identified through the 90-day plans, and this is a strategy I use when I work with leadership teams and buildings, is it's like the Cataract Canyon. It's very narrow and it's very deep. What are those high leverage strategies that will improve student achievement that we can pull very hard on and push an intense support on? So at the end of 90 days, we will see success. Here are some more pictures of our students and the reasons why we are committed to the work that we do each and every day in our district. As we continue down this road for the designated pathway plan to improve the accreditation of our district, we were very thoughtful on the work that we had currently done, what was working, what was not working, and what would be the best pathway for us. The board has been very thoughtful in this process also, and we looked at a lot of our data, a lot of the analysis, and what has been working, where are the challenges that lie ahead of us. The management pathway is most likely to drive the improvements in our district because it builds upon the existing work that we have done in the district that we have shown gains and improvement in the achievement of our students. This also aligns with the recommendations of the State Review Panel and the Colorado Department of Education. Why the University of Virginia? The work with the University of Virginia Turnaround Program is nationally proven, as is seen before you on the slide. But I also like to highlight why it's important for us, and that's the progress that we have seen moving forward in our district. We have had the increase in two of the three elementary schools that we have worked intensely with through the University of Virginia for the last 2 years. The third school, Mesa Elementary, did not improve in accreditation rating because they lacked the significant growth in fourth grade, which we've addressed and is pushing in support for this year. The board is confident we can maintain and expand these gains throughout the district and this pathway partnership, and we will be off the clock in 2 years. With UVA's partnership, we have two components in the pathway proposal. We have the support component, and then we also have the accountability component. The support component includes Cortez Middle School and Montezuma Cortez High School going into the UVA year two partnership with ongoing coaching at the district leadership level. The coaching will consist of identifying and expanding our district systems that have been effective and which ones do we need to revise and go more in depth with. The accountability oversight will consist of oversight and evaluation of the implementation of the pathway plan with implementation milestones and academic outcomes for the district. This contract will ensure that CDE and the State Board will receive written reports on the district progress and the outcomes. This slide is a summation of the overview of the key elements of our district plan. If you will notice to the left, the key strategies, research shows that there has to be district alignment from the Board of Education clear down to the classroom. If you look at our key strategies, this plan does exactly that. It aligns the work from the Board of Education clear down to the differentiation at the school level and the classroom level. We have key specific activities that we will be addressing with milestones and specific outcomes. Part of the key strategies is work created in building teacher leaders' capacity at every level with ongoing training and support for existing teachers and leaders. We're also committed to recruiting and retaining strong teachers. This includes the partnership with Betcher, as well as alternative licensure and some very aggressive not only recruitment strategies, but also retention strategies, which we need for our district. We ensure all of our schools are implementing best turnaround practices throughout the 90-day plans, allowing for rapid monitoring and adjustment if needed.
One of our specific focuses, which we will talk more, I'm sure, later today, is the talent management. Currently, we have 50% of our teachers that have less than 5 years of experience in our district. So we are truly working on an aggressive talent management strand. So I'd like to get in my portion of the presentation the way I started it, and that's with our students in the Montezuma Cortez School District. It's a very proudful district, and we're very prideful of the students that we have in our district. Now I'd like to introduce Dr. Jack Schutemeyer, our Board of Education President.
Thank you. As Lori said, my name is Jack Schutemeyer, President of the Board of Education of this school district. In my other life, I'm president of a statistical consulting firm and a professor emeritus of statistics, so I may have perhaps a little more appreciation than most for the importance and the appropriate use of data. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you all this morning. Before I get into my brief remarks, I'd like to introduce my colleagues on the board who are here and who've given up a couple days of their valuable time away from business and family. So first of all, we have Eric White, who's our vice president, Sherry Wright, who's our treasurer, Pete Montagno, who's our secretary, and Kara Sukla, who is a relatively new member of our board. And I certainly appreciate the fact that they have come here to be with us this morning. First and foremost, our board is fully committed to the pathway proposal. We have voted unanimously to support it. In addition, this board is very proactive. We have taken part in the turnaround training, the strategic planning, and to further engage our diverse community. We've enthusiastically supported the work of our partners, the University of Virginia. I think combined we're making some real progress. We also appreciate the suggestions, the feedback that we've received from CDE staff. It's been extremely helpful. One of the things that I think we've really done is that impresses me as a data geek is that the staff has really been doing evaluations in a very timely fashion and then be able to make changes as appropriate when needed. In the past, I think sometimes it took much too long to do this, but so I think that's important. Our board is going to continue to review our district plans performance in a timely fashion, and we're clearly committed to making data-driven decisions. As Lori noted, we clearly face challenges. Our teachers are not paid at a competitive salary. Many of our children come from low-income households, so they don't have the technology, the reading materials, and the other advantages that children in more affluent communities have. We need to provide more experiential education to allow our children to broaden their horizons beyond what they see in Southwest Colorado. In addition, many of our tech buses, our technology, our buildings are old and need of replacement. This fall, we propose to ask the voters of our district to support a mill levy, which will help correct some of these problems. Of primary importance, of course, is that we're working to ensure that all of our children graduate from college or from high school prepared to enter college and have successful careers in the workforce. In a rapidly changing world and in a global economy, none of us can really predict what's going to happen even 10 years down the road, much less in the careers of these children. So it's really important that we instill in each and every one of them a love of education. Basically, our children need to consider themselves to be worthwhile contributing members of our society, and with our help, I think they will accomplish this. So thank you for your attention.
I would also like to highlight the support of the board is, as you can see, we have 5 of our 7 members of our board present from their own time and taking time off from their work to be here today. And then when we get back on March 14th, we'll be going into a 3-year strategic planning process. So that shows you the support and the progressive board we have before you today. The next partner to the district I'd like to introduce is Ms. Tina King Washington, and she is from the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe. She's a K-12 curriculum director and has been really instrumental in assisting and supporting the district as we move forward and strengthening our partnership between the education department, the tribe, and the district. Tina?
Good morning. It's an honor to address the state school board. My name is Tina King Washington, and I am the K-12 education director for the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe. I have also served on as a teacher for the Montezuma Cortez School District, 5th grade, 1st grade, ELL teacher in the middle school. So I have a little bit of background knowledge about what happens in the classroom. So that kind of helps me to do the job that I'm doing and to coordinate services with the RE1 School District. I've also been a school board member, and I've taught in Grand Junction School District as an ELL teacher, and Shiprock Mesa Elementary down in Shiprock as an ELL teacher. So I have a good background. I kind of think I am aware of all the issues that go on in the classroom, and it certainly isn't an easy place for teachers to be this day and time. It's very difficult. When we look at the challenges that our students face outside of the classroom, you know, you can see that the students have a difficult time sometimes, especially our children on the reservation, as we fight alcoholism and diabetes. It's very difficult for our kids. So we work at that. We try and make things better for them. We are the 3rd generation right now of children going through the public school district. And that isn't very long when you look at that. And when we started out, our children struggled. Our grandparents who went to school struggled, and it was very difficult for them. And so that, we had to overcome that. And this generation right now is the one that we're seeing some real progress. And we're very, very pleased about that. So our traditions and cultures also are in that mix. We have to make sure that our traditions and cultures go on with our students. And that's part of an education process as well. We do have several things with the school district that I am very pleased. I talk to most of the principals and the administrators on a daily basis. And I'm sure they cringe when they see the phone and it's me. It's like, oh no, what's going on now? But we have a good relationship. And we try and work out things in the best manner possible for the students. And I think that's an important thing to remember. We do have a communication support committee that has been formed between the RE1 School District and the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, where our officials meet with the school officials, and we work on any issues that are upcoming. We work on bullying issues, we work on dress code issues, we work on any kind of issue that will help us to help the students achieve their education. We also have implemented a Cortez Middle School Science Night once a month, and this is so exciting. Our kids at the middle school go to their science teacher. They create experiments to come down and show the community. So the children are the teachers, and the teachers are the facilitators. They are there only to say, what is the hypothesis of this process that you're doing, or what else do you need to say about this? And you know, the community has come and embraced that night. And it's just been a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's showing that kids are going to want to learn and enjoy teaching others. So maybe this will lead to teachers in our school district. That's what I hope. The Assistant Superintendent, Mr. Dan Porter, has been a very good resource for us. He even comes down and meets with parents and families and students when it's necessary, and that's been very, very good because that road goes both ways, and so we're very pleased with that process. We do have a graduation task force at the high school. The high school, I'm really enjoying our relationship with them, and we are trying to get more graduates every year, and a good part of that has been with the efforts of Alicia Whitehead, who is our caseworker, student caseworker, and she goes to the high school, works with students almost on a daily basis. We also have been meeting in the evenings, and just the other day when we had President's Day, our staff stayed, and one person from the high school came, and we met with kids to try and get them to where they need to be so they can graduate. So we are making those kind of efforts as a joint effort. And I think it's going to be very, very good. I'm very pleased with the way we can talk and discuss and coordinate with the RE1 school district. And I think that's all I have, and I appreciate your time. If you have questions, Alicia and I are here to answer any of them, but we appreciate the chance. Thank you.
And now I'd like to introduce Dr. William Robinson from the University of Virginia, which obviously is a key component to our Pathways Plan.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to have a conversation about serving Cortez's students in a better way. Our work is about building leadership capacity and establishing the conditions necessary to accelerate schools so that students can have better opportunities in life. Our work, like your work, is about serving students, and that's why it's such an honor to be here to support Superintendent Hockness, because our work is more successful when we have district leaders, when we have school board leaders, when we have community members who are absolutely committed and have the will to say, we can do better, and we're all in figuring out how to do better and how to serve our kids. And so it's just our work starts with helping district leaders establish the conditions where schools can be successful. Schools do not operate on islands. Schools and districts must work together to co-create success. And if you look 3-4 years ago in Cortez, teachers were not provided with the curriculum tools, the assessment, the understanding of standards, professional development they needed in order to drive success for students. Our work with Cortez over the last couple of years has been in partnership in helping them create those conditions. And now we're looking forward to helping them accelerate those conditions, because now that the curriculum and the assessments and the support visits are in place, that's just the beginning of the process. Now it's really working in deeper partnership with teachers to help them understand how to leverage those tools to take their instruction and with students to help them take learning to the next level. Talent management is one of the key conditions that has been highlighted in the Pathways proposal, that as the district has focused on getting instruction tools over the last couple of years, the next phase is to really focus more on talent management. The Cortez proposal highlights that Cortez should be the number one rural district in the state for attracting teachers to want to come for development and impact opportunities. And they are well positioned to achieve that with a great success and support and accountability in achieving that. So that's number one. Our hope is to help them accelerate those conditions. Number two is in our partnership, we'll continue to work with district leadership and now spread our practice to secondary leadership to build the leadership capacity necessary to achieve the success we're speaking about. As everyone in this room knows, this work is not about just establishing what needs to happen and establishing tools and templates and curriculums. It's about how do you engage, inspire, invite, and include other teachers and staff to reach their potential. Leadership is not about the what, it's about the how. And these leaders are well positioned to, they've not only brought more effective leadership to their district, they're well positioned to take their leadership to another level. And again, for the secondary school leaders to also accelerate their improvements. Our third focus beyond establishing conditions and building leadership capacity is helping with the implementation in a hands-on manner. Across the country, we've identified consultants who have been in the shoes of district leaders in very similar environments. We've worked, for instance, in Farmington and Gallup, New Mexico, two of the three highest growth districts in New Mexico within 50 miles of Cortez. And leaders from those settings and other settings are going to be part of our efforts to roll up our sleeves together and see what's working and what's not about the Pathways proposal, and not just say, where are you off track, but help brainstorm and roll up our sleeves together to pivot and adjust to ensure that the plan is meeting the needs of the students based on evidence of progress. And number four, our role through this Pathways proposal is to provide oversight and accountability. We've talked about, we have a district turnaround conditions rubric that we've aligned to CDE's rubric and that we're aligning to their Pathways proposal. And if we have the honor of getting to support Cortez, we will establish explicit metrics within that rubric that will drive our support and accountability to this work and report back very honestly to the district as well as the school board where the district stands and what next steps are going to be necessary to better serve students and have them achieve those opportunities in life. So thank you for your time. I look forward to your questions.
So, Board, I'd like to end this presentation with a picture of some of our students from Kemper Elementary. We have a very expansive and we're currently expanding farm-to-school program within the schools. And through our farm-to-school program with the partnership with the farm-to-school program and Mesa Elementary, we actually had students that were invited to help plant the garden at the White House with Mrs. Obama. And actually, they were invited once, and they attended, and it was such a positive experience, they were invited to go back again. So they got to go back twice. So so that concludes our presentation from Montezuma Cortez School District, and we'll be happy to entertain any questions. And additionally, if the board needs any additional information that I do not have today, we will be happy to provide that for the board.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hockness, and for the entire Montezuma Cortez folks. You've done quite a deep dive, which I'm grateful. Also, forgive me if I'm not very proud of our staff for the work that you've done to help this process. It's pretty unusual for the seven of us to not get to talk for a whole hour, I think. So if you'll indulge us, please, I'm going to have my colleagues ask questions and hopefully interact with each of you. But I do want to give my sincere thanks for the great job. You've all done. Thank you. Who wants to start off? Board Member Flores.
Well, one thing that stuck out was that for 5 years, teachers didn't have the tools to work or objectives to work with kids, and this seems to be, was it because of what the state was doing in creating standards, or was it that the standard work was just so hard to actually actualize into curricula or objectives and projects and such for the school?
I can actually answer that because it's probably reflective on a little bit of the work I did. I was director of curriculum and instruction at the time, and we had actually done, when I was asked to come up to central office, I was asked to align the curriculum, and at that time that's when we were starting to align the curriculum. So we actually had a district support visit underneath the Katy visit. And what was a determination at that time is that we had a very nice lined curriculum in every content area, and it wasn't effectively being taught in the classrooms. And so we had to really stop and look, why was it not being taught in the classrooms? Was it the knowledge of the standards? And so the curriculum was, when I say curriculum, I'm talking about standards. So the standards were being taught in the classroom, but what was happening is we were just benchmarking our students. And so we would benchmark and say, okay, well, this is what's happening on our winter benchmark data, but we really weren't doing any strategic interim assessment work. Some of the teachers were doing formative assessments very successfully, some of the teachers were not. So one of the components that we did put in when we entered the partnership with UVA is we started backwards designing from the interim assessments. And quite frankly, that was a challenge for us, and it really brought home part of the issue is our instruction was not rigorous enough. Our instruction was at a level one or level two in instruction. So the interim assessments really made us be reflective of what students need to know and be able to do at the end of the year, instead of being reflected how well did our students do at the end of the year meeting the standards. Now we stop, we recalibrate, what are we going to do to ensure that our students do master these end of the year standards. And that's what I attribute, quite frankly, to the increase in the achievement in the elementary schools we had. Just like I came before you in my presentation, I said Mesa Elementary did not improve in accreditation ratings because of their fourth grade and grades did not have enough growth or achievement. I honestly couldn't have said that to you 4 years ago. So it's really made us look very specifically clearly onto the student level, but also stop and recalibrate what we need to do with the instruction at that moment in time.
Thank you. Ms. Masnick.
Thank you all for coming and for your dedication. I would like to know a little more about your student community engagement, given the challenges you're facing with the students and the community. And I'd like to hear from you, too, with the collaboration between the tribe and the district on getting students and community together with you on this quest.
Yes. As far as the Mountain Ute Tribe is concerned, we strive to make sure that our kids get to school. The RE1 school buses do come down, but after school, our tribe provides two small buses for them to stay for tutoring, and then we bring them home. And I can see a huge difference in Kemper simply because we have to have one full bus for the Kemper kids to come home after school tutoring. So I can see how that school turned around. That's the biggest thing. And we do provide two buses to bring them home. We also provide help with the athletics. And sometimes that's a challenge when the coach forgets to tell us, oh yeah, we have practice today and the kids are waiting. It's like, I get calls at all times of the night, so that's fine too. But yes, we are trying, and the tribe supports our whole staff. I have a staff of six that help with the education with the RE1 school district.
And how about the rest of the community around the district?
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about student engagement or community engagement in relation to students?
Parents, mm-hmm. Business, community.
We are starting a very strong partnership with our businesses through our high school. This was actually kind of a grassroots effort from the high school and incorporating a lot of partnerships for our students at the high school, so they actually get the mentorship with that. We have community members that actually come in and do career talks, and we actually have in one of our elementary schools that's been very successful. It's called Watchdogs. I don't know if you've heard of that program. Watchdog Dads, that's what it is. Watchdog Dads, and I trip up on that because we've had to expand it to Watchdog Dads means Watchdog Moms too, because a lot of our students come from single families. And the Watchdog Dad program is a program to where the community or the parent community comes in and they actually get their own shirts, and what they do is they kind of do parent duty for the day. And so they're in the classrooms, they're on the playgrounds, they're in the lunchrooms, and they actually sign up. And we don't have a commitment for it, it's just when you can, but we have almost a watchdog parent, per se, in the specific elementary school at least once a week, and it's been very successful. And so this has now been expanded to the Cortez Middle School. So that's one way that we engage the parents in a fun way. We also do a lot of outreach in our district. We have the traditional parent-teacher conferences and READAC conferences that you see on every school schedule, probably across the state of Colorado. But one of the other things we have to do with our community is we do a lot of outreach and actually go to the parents' homes in order to work closely with those parents. as Tina was saying about the connection we have with the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, we do have a large percentage of our Native American students. And unfortunately, a lot of the Native American parents did not have a positive environment when they went to school. So trust is a very large issue in our district. And so the way that we bridge that, and it takes many, many years to build that trust, is for us to do up and beyond just what our calendar says. So like Tina said, we go down to the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe regularly. We also have administration and counselors that go down to the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe. But we do a lot of family outreach in order to reach our community. We also have a lot of activities expanded in each of the individual schools where we invite the parents in multiple times to reach our parents. And then also we have a very strong partnership within our community. One of the conversations we've had at the board level is how truly do we engage our community more and bridge the work the district's doing with the community and making sure we have the voice of the community at the forefront. And that is why the board's elected to go into this three-year strategic plan. It's a non-traditional approach of a strategic plan. The way that it's going to be conducted is on Tuesday we will have a work session with CASB on what the board determines the strategic plan should look like and what feedback we should have from the community. And then we are actually going out to all the community groups and eliciting their feedback. Instead of having a day and a half of having community members come in, we are going out to the community. It will take a lot more time, but I feel like it'll be very beneficial in hearing the community and building up the bridge between the district and the community and to improve the community engagement.
Thank you. I would like to add one more thing if I might. We also, at the tribe, we have all the teachers, the new teachers, or teachers that are coming into our district. We have them come down half a day at the first of the year so that we can talk to them about the Ute tribe, some of the issues we have, who we are, some of our cultures and traditions, so that they're aware of what our kids are about when they start teaching them. So I think that's an important thing, and the school district provides a half a day for those teachers to come down and be aware of who we are.
Yeah, if I can just make a couple of additional comments. The individual members of the board have given talks to Kiwanis and other local community groups explaining what we do. We plan to do more of that in the future, as well as having public meetings, as Lori said, in connection with the strategic planning, as well as in connection with the proposal for a mill levy increase. All of my colleagues on the board are very responsive in terms of dealing with issues of concern from the citizens of the community.
We also have reflected in each one of the school's 90 days plans, one of the common goals as a district is culture and climate. And part of the culture and climate is the culture between the school and the community too. So each individual school has individual outcomes for that.
Ms. McClellan.
Thank you so much for your testimony, all of you, for giving us a more complete picture of just the raw data that we're seeing. I appreciate it. With so much hinging on community engagement in terms of leveraging your plan for improvement, one of the areas that I noticed was maybe some holes in participation with respect to accountability participation. Mm-hmm. And I know Board President Schunemeyer has spoken to his appreciation for having a complete picture of the data. Can you speak to what it is in your community outreach planning that has touched on encouragement for participation so we can get a complete picture? And mm-hmm. if it's all right, I'd love to have a follow-up question.
Yeah, that would be great. We actually have a community strategy to increase the participation, quite frankly. And part of that encompasses is, one, actually informing our parents the purpose of the testing and what we can use the testing for. I think there's been a lack of messaging centered behind that. And so we've actually done a whole message campaign. And with the theme of the message campaign is to tell our story, because we can't tell our story of how our students are doing because we don't have the data. and the importance of having this data, because as we talk about the end-of-year standards and the students achieving the end-of-year standards, we really need to know how our students are doing on a national basis. So one is really informing the parents of that and the importance of it. And each individual administrator is meeting with any parents that are questioning that, quite frankly. And then also from the district level, where we are having the district accountability requested that we had a district night just to explain the purpose of the assessments and the benefit of having them. And this time last year, we had a lot of parents coming in not supported the state assessment as we're going into this assessment cycle. And right now, we only have two students in our district, so we will make the assessment. It's been a really supportive process with this, but all the schools are very advocating for it, and the teachers are advocating for it, and really informing the parents of the importance of it.
If I can just make a couple of additions to that, one of the challenges that we face is that we have, as Laurie mentioned earlier, a lot of single parent families, and even where we have two parent families, a lot of them are working very hard at minimum wage jobs, and find it very difficult to come to things. So we're certainly working to improve our communication using whatever social network media is available to do that. And like I said, that will be expanded in the future. So I think we're making progress, but it's a challenge.
Just to add kind of an interesting side note to that, we have two factions. We have one, the opportunity for the students to take the test, and then the opportunity for our students to do well on the test. And as you know, looking at our data, we definitely had the issue was at the secondary level. So, in thinking from a kid's point of view, I talked to our media class at the high school, and they are actually doing an infomercial of why it's important to do your very best. And so that will be awesome. Given from fifth grade to ninth grade. Haven't seen it yet. They promised it right before spring break, so I'll be happy to share that with the board. If you'd like to see it, I'm sure they'll do a phenomenal job.
If I can make one additional comment to that, I was my oldest granddaughter is a freshman in high school, and I was asking her about it the other day, and said, what do we need to do to give students and more incentive to do better on these tests? And she said, give prizes.
Never a bad idea. And then my follow-up would be, I really commend you on going after a mill levy. I think you can't get what you don't ask for, and that may be a critical boost for you. How does Plan B look in the event that mill levy doesn't go forward successfully or doesn't have the outcome that you hope for, given that this is a community where some households have struggled with poverty and community outreach is something that you're engaging in ongoing efforts to continue to improve? What happens in Plan B in the event that the mill levy doesn't go your way? How does that affect your plans?
And this is something we're planning for underneath my administration. As you know, that retaining teachers' salary is only one component. Yes, it's a very important component, but it's actually, if you look at the research and the surveys that we've received from our new teachers, which we have two components with our new teachers. We surveyed them at the end of the year. We have ongoing feedback coming from a mentor teacher that I had allocated to support our new teachers. And then also the assistant superintendent and myself met with every teacher at the mid-year to see how they were doing. There's some things that we can do to offset that. One of the things that we're looking at is working with our community and seeing if they'll reduce the price of the rentals in Cortez, because quite frankly, your mortgage payment in Cortez is cheaper than a rental. And just really working with the community in some ways that we can reduce potentially some of the cost for our teachers so that we can retain them. We may not be able to increase their salaries, but we could do some other things to help offset the low salaries. Mm-hmm. If I can wrap around the community engagement for just a minute. The community has came together with the key community members of our nonprofits, and so they've created what's called the collective impact, and this is work that's done that the school district is very instrumental in. and it's actually focusing on wraparound services from cradle to career. And so we are really creating a whole process of when a student comes into our community and they may need additional supports, and how can we leverage all our community support services around that.
Board Member Flores.
Thank you. I wanted to ask if there were any, if there were any rituals, events, or celebrations for all, I know you're a multicultural community, for all these cultures to come together. Is there maybe a celebration during the year where kids can participate and all families come together for this celebration?
We don't have just one celebration, but I know at the high school they have a Native American club, and they do do like powwows and other things that includes other tribes, not just Ute Mountain. But the school district's been very good about our big celebration is June 1st, the first weekend in June. So school's out by then. But we do have teachers who come down to participate and to watch that. So that's a good thing. But because the school is focusing on education, some of those things, we used to have a big, it used to be called a Sun Conference, where we would go, and it was very, very more just celebrate the culture. And we haven't had that in some years. But what we are doing is making sure that we have representation at the Native American clubs. And they are doing a very good job. They also take them to the annual club. Anyway, they make efforts to take kids to those kind of things, and so it's a very good thing.
Right. And you have the Hispanic culture, mm-hmm. and then you have various other, maybe white cultures mm-hmm. Together. Yes. Is there something that brings all of them together where, I'm just thinking of, I guess, Santa Fe that has mm-hmm. A three culture kind of big celebration together, and where each one sort of displays their.
That's actually a very good suggestion. We have Cinco de Mayo, which we celebrate within the schools. We have tried to embed the culture within the context of what's happening. For instance, like at our graduation, we have the drummers from the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe. So we try to be very reflective
as far as the
culture. But that's actually a very, very, very good suggestion, to be honest.
Right.
I appreciate that.
And mm-hmm. I think children could bring that together, mm-hmm. you know, in the schools. Children mm-hmm. always do.
Yeah, I appreciate that suggestion.
So I have a couple of questions. Did you have some questions, Ms. Ring? First of all, of staff, I would like to ask, when you mentioned that innovation status might be appropriate for MANA, is mm-hmm. that the right name of the
yes,
elementary
that's
school?
Correct.
Can you explain to me why that might be helpful for them, since they're still at, I believe, the struggle stage mm-hmm. somewhat?
Yes. Innovation status for MANA would be more appropriate, because I think the district has reflected on that individual school's need, and they really need a whole school culture reset. And that's why we would consider that pathway option.
But you can't identify any particular waivers that they would need in order to,
since they are a year behind in the clock, those are sort of initial conversations, but the district may be able to answer more specifically around those waivers.
Are there some restrictions, district-wide or statewide restrictions that, if relieved, would help MANA?
We are not held to any mandated waivers that we would need to waive for MANA, okay. quite frankly. I think Nicole definitely highlighted it. When she said that MANA Elementary needs a culture reset or a culture start.
An innovation process might, just the process itself,
yes.
might stir those discussions. Was that kind
exactly,
of what I'm hearing?
And, okay. and just totally reset it. Now, what's currently happening at MANA through the tiered intervention grant is basically a culture resign and a program resign. And so they're actually starting that whole process now. And so the innovation status would complement the work that's currently being done through the redesign at this time.
Okay. If I could add something as well. Sure. Sometimes our schools and districts just need to send a message to the community that this school will look and feel different. Mm-hmm. And innovation status is one of our vehicles to do that.
And in our community, we would need to definitely have an innovation status or something like that to change.
Okay. That helps. Mm-hmm. I would appreciate if you'd tell me a little bit more about your alternative education campus. I think you have a very high percentage of your high schoolers that are participating in that program rather than the normal high school. Tell me a little bit mm-hmm. about the kids that go there. What's different for them? What are the things that you're thinking about changing in order to improve the outcomes for those students?
Okay, I'll start out off with the first part of that, and then I'm going to tag in Carol Mahasey, because when Carol came to the district, I asked her if she would formalize our partnership with charters, because before that time, we did not have any formal process to support our charter schools, but also to hold our charter schools accountable. And so with Southwest Open Charter School, it actually serves the district and it is a district charter, but it also receives students from our surrounding districts too. Oh. So some of the students that are now ours came from Dolores, Mancos, and Dove Creek. Just because of where we are, they can actually drive, and they do refer students that are not being successful in the traditional high school to the charter, and that's fine. Because some of our students do need an alternative education, and that SWOS does serve the purpose for some of our students. SWOS itself, the strength of SWOS is because it's project-based and it does a lot of alternative instruction, which is beneficial for our students. If you go to SWOS, it has a very high culture, but if you also see the data, we have an issue with the graduation and dropout rate, which is where we're currently pushing in the support with that. And so I'm going to actually let Carol talk about some of the work she's currently doing with SWOS as the district liaison for our charter schools.
Thank you. My name is Carol Mahasey, and I'm the Director of School Improvement, and I'm also the charter school oversight liaison. To build on what Superintendent Hockness was saying, SWOS does provide a very, I think, engaging culture and really focuses on helping students master some of those behavioral and life skills that can help them be successful in a school environment. I think in the past, where they have struggled is they were not tracking their overage under credit data as closely as they needed to be, and so they weren't necessarily creating those pathways to graduation that students need to stay on track, especially if they've already fallen behind in terms of their credit accumulation, and then bringing alongside that some of the essential skill building. If students were missing gaps in key skills, it would enable them to be successful in those high school level courses. SWOS does have a new director this year, and they have engaged in their own complete redesign and strategic planning with their board, and they have invited us to be a partner at the table in those conversations to make sure that they are looking at those critical issues, and they are in the midst right now of redesigning it and have already implemented some changes to address the overage under credit, to address the skills gaps, to address some of the truancy and absenteeism issues they were having to make sure that they can close those gaps. And then from our part as the authorizer, we have really improved our oversight and accountability processes so that we now have clear annual reports for the boards and annual meetings to progress monitor. In this case in particular, because this is a priority improvement school, we meet on a regular basis quarterly to look at their ongoing interim data around dropouts and which kids are they losing and why, so that we're making sure that we are jointly looking at their implementation of these changes in real time so they can make adjustments if they need to for those.
That's great, thank you. I was very impressed with your efforts to improve the opportunities and recruitment of teachers, and I believe, Ms. Hockness, are you from that area? And you've been there a very long time?
Yes, I started very young. No.
we all did.
I actually have been in the district for a very long time and actually has been privileged to lead the turnaround work in my previous position, so it's a privilege to lead the work. But I'm actually one of the students that actually graduated from Montezuma Cortez School District that actually went back to the community, and so it's my goal to graduate students, let them be successful, so they actually come back and move our community forward.
So they're from that notion. I had my suspicions about that. I'm wondering about teacher cadet programs, things like that. You're working really hard now to build a cadre of teachers that are the best teachers in the state and that want to stay there. How are you doing anything to grow your own?
We are. We actually have the Betcher program, which actually has been very instrumental in part of our recruiting strategy is identify people to apply for the Betcher program because they have a very, very high-level screening process before they're even accepted into the Betcher program, because obviously we want to recruit, but we also want to recruit teachers that are going to be high-quality teachers before our students. And so we work specifically with the Betcher program. We also work through the alternative licensure program, too. And then we just currently, and Carol gave me this note just to remind me, I had a meeting with Fort Lewis College just 2 weeks ago, and we're going to start recruiting some of our support staff, which, as you know from being in the classrooms, are official teachers, and so recruit some of our support staff to also, through the Fort Lewis program, become certified teachers. So we really are looking at how can we grow our own in addition to bringing teachers from the outside in, because it is very nice to have that balance, obviously, for our students, too.
All right, thank you. And one more question, if I may, and we'll go back around. Given that a lot of your challenges have been have appeared to be mostly at the elementary, usually it's the opposite, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kids are behind in elementary and then struggle in high school, whereas somehow the numbers have flipped for your district. But I'm wondering what your feelings are about the READ Act, how you've used it, whether it's made a difference in helping your elementary kids move forward.
I actually had the privilege to be in during the discussion yesterday with the board.
Oh.
and I think I can address the one comment that you made in answer to your question is, you know, that was something when we were looking at the data is, why is our elementary schools struggling so much, and then when they get to middle school and high school, how are they growing more? Because basically that's where our, quite frankly, our accreditation was coming from, is from the growth of our students and not necessarily the achievement. We're growing our students, but we're not growing them enough to be successful. And so we really had to be thoughtful and look at the data, and we knew what the data was showing is that our kindergartners come in significantly low above the national level. And we had known that, but when we started using DIBELS under the READ Act, we realized how low they truly were coming. So we really created a lot of strategies and had extremely strong superhero kindergarten teachers that were able to move our students up to benchmark by the end of the year. But that benchmark wasn't keeping pace with first and second grade. They were starting to fall back again. So we were really looking at why is that? And so one of our elementary schools had the opportunity for the ELAC grant and has received very intense coaching through the ELAC grant with the READ Act. And what we have found out just currently this year is, even though we're moving our kindergartners a lot of times from the red to benchmark, it's the low end of the benchmark, and that's not enough to grow our students to be successful in learning the specific skills they need to read. So what we really need to do is, even though our students are showing that they're at the green at benchmark, we need to move them all the way over to the right side of the grade level benchmark in order for the students to retain the skills that they had learned through the summer, because we have a very significant summer retention issue, and that was what was being reflected at our kindergarten level. So I really do feel, especially this year, and being able to really look at the data and disaggregating it down to the level through the ELAT of what was going on with our district, that we now have a much more clearer plan of where we need to make sure our kindergartners are at and moving forward to first grade.
Thank you. Board Member Flores.
Thank you. I did a lot of work with kids in STEM, I guess you would call it now, science and engineering. But it was, I looked at the research with when kids were really interested in and starting to think about what they wanted to do. And it seemed some research earlier was at the junior high level, you know, the seventh and eighth grade. But later research shows that kids are really starting to think about that in elementary school, upper elementary school, and middle school, where, you know, you might think about clubs such as Future Teachers, I know it has another name mm-hmm. now, where clubs in this area, but STEM and all the mm-hmm. other clubs that, you know, kids could get interested in, and it just seems as if that has really helped kids read more, you know, in the area of interest, get them involved with other kids that are like that. And I'm not just saying just mm-hmm. those areas, mm-hmm. but maybe history and literature and such, but especially teachers. I think that is an interesting kind of research area of how to get kids motivated and thinking mm-hmm. about their future in the workplace.
We actually have been very fortunate with being one of the recipients of the Nation Foundation, the YIP Foundation here in Denver. And so through the foundation, they've actually put us in contact with a very highly successful charter, STEM charter. It's actually, the charter itself is a high school charter, but it's actually a K-8 STEM charter. And so we actually have a group of teachers coming up the third week of April to tour the charter and see how we can potentially partner with this charter school with the teachers that are proficient on how to do STEM, and even potentially how can we maybe do some video conferencing or streaming on STEM activities to help our teachers, because we are so remote. So I'm very excited about the next phases with that, because you are absolutely correct.
Now, if I can add a couple of comments that I absolutely agree with you. I was a number of years ago, I was a professor at the University of Delaware. I was also on the board of a what would be now called a STEM charter school. It was a 9 through 12, and it was just the opportunities that they had were really quite wonderful. But you know, I've even working with my own grandchildren now, I see that at a really pretty early age, they have some interest in real problems. I mean, for example, in our area, archaeology, anthropology is very important, as well as biology, water quality, and the like. So I think that we can really get kids engaged. And you know, as a scientist and as a statistician, it's important to get kids engaged at a really early age and in dealing with real data.
Right. And teachers, and I was honing in on teachers and getting kids interested in teaching, that it starts at an early age when they take that. And of course, science too. And it, you know, all these areas, kids are very mm-hmm. interested. And I think that these clubs definitely help.
Yeah, if I can just make an addition, and I absolutely agree with you. I think one of the thoughts that I had was to see if there are ways where we can give teachers an opportunity to be engaged in, say, summer work that's related to their particular discipline, where we are very often teachers. Because they need some extra money or wind up working at McDonald's or something that's not related to their disciplines. And, you know, there may be a possibility of doing some kind of an interactive internships where, say, teachers might spend a few days, say, here in Denver working with one of the companies, and then actually doing an internship via an email kind of thing, or Skyping, or some other technique. So there, I think there's some real opportunities to do that, which would again help with the teacher retention, as a number of people have referred to. So I think there's a lot of exciting things.
And even teacher exchanges with other districts, mm-hmm. with your teachers coming in to maybe Denver and Denver teachers going out to Cortez.
Yeah.
Board Member Rankin?
I have a couple of questions. First of all, thank you, Superintendent Hockness. I'm so proud to represent your district up here on the board. And it's been great getting to know you, I guess, last year. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Dr. Robinson, for helping. And Dr. Robinson, thank you for helping with the laser focus on the prioritizing. I think that seems to be the theme of figuring out what the things you have to work on first has helped this district mm-hmm. so much. So thank you very much. Along those same lines, in the last 2014 until 2017, I notice we have a total of, I believe, and Ms. Bausch, you can correct me on this, $291,782 is a total in grants. So rounded off 2.3. Over 3 years, how are we gonna, you see the question where it's going, how are we going to move forward? Are these grants going to end, or do we have a plan, or do we have an idea on how we can continue the momentum?
Good question.
Sure, yes, thank you, Board Member Rankin. That is a very good question, yes. Montezuma Cortez has been done a great job in, again, strategically applying for those grants that best fit the needs for their schools. Of course, when a grant ends, it does leave a little bit of a gap, although all of the grants are intended to be sustaining. So when they apply for the grant, there's always a section that asks, how will you sustain these efforts beyond the life of the grant? And they're targeted towards activities that should, less being an FTE, for example, and more being practices in sustaining those programs within their schools themselves. So of course some of these grants do support FTEs, for example the school counselor core grant, but many of them also help really develop those that knowledge and that skill set that then the district can carry on with its own means. But of course we hope to continue to be able to, as a state, provide and support schools with grants, and they're welcome to continue to apply for those as they become available.
Are there any other grants that are not included in this report that have also been applied for through other directions? Is there any other money, or is this the total amount in grants that they've received during this turnaround process?
Is this comprehensive of what they've received, or are you asking if there's others that they could potentially apply for in the future?
No, the first one. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I believe this is mostly comprehensive of these three school years. However, this only starts in 2014-15. So prior to that, there were additional grants that the school district sure. received. Yes.
These would be the main ones, because it seems to me after 2 years, you saw the writing on the wall and went after mm-hmm. the help, and that through CDE and otherwise, and that seems to have really paid off. But it's a great amount of money, and it's not something we want to have come abruptly to an end because of the finances. And I have one more question. How many students out of the 2,800, 3,000 that you have are Ute, Mountain Ute, and Southern Ute? If you can divide those up, approximately.
Geographically, where we're located, we specifically service the Ute, Mountain Ute students. So we have Ute, Mountain Ute students and Navajo students. The issue that we have before us, and I'm highlighting this because I know if I don't, Tina will.
Yes.
We have an IPP meeting every year, and we're expanding it to two times a year, where we meet traditionally on the education of Native American students, specifically Ute, Mountain Ute students and Navajo students. When I first started many years ago, it was easy to designate the difference between our cultures within our district. But it's actually, and I'll answer your question, but I'm clarifying first. What has happened is whenever the ethnicity designation changed, it changed our reporting out from the parents. Because what happens is we have Native American students that may have another portion of another ethnicity or race. And if they report that race, then the Native American isn't at the forefront. So on the federal guidelines, the state guidelines, we have some inaccurate data for our students on who truly is a Navajo student, who truly is a Ute, Mountain Ute student, or quite frankly, how many of our students are predominantly Native American. So we actually try to run our internal data with that to keep it clean for working with the individual tribes. So roughly we have 27% of our students that are Native American.
That answered my question. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Board Member Durham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hogan, just a couple of questions. How? What's your total district budget?
Roughly $22 million.
And how? What is that? That's all funds, federal, state, local.
Yes.
And so per pupil, that comes to, do you know off the top of your head?
Roughly $6,700 per pupil.
That I don't think that math works, and I get somebody in the back of the room shaking their head. Mm-hmm. What?
We roughly get $6,000 per pupil.
Per the state? That's from the state. What's?
Yes.
I'm looking for total expenditure. If you take the $22 million and divide it by 4,000, how many ever students? I guess I could do the math myself. I had a calculator. I'm Common Core challenged, so I'd like to have somebody do it for me. But
okay, so let's see. They have 2,800.
They have 2,800 students.
That should be on one of the sheets.
Anybody have a calculator handy?
7,800. Oh, here it is. Base funding $6,292.
So you got
Now.
I agree.
Okay, so it would be this one.
If you take the total budget and divide it by the number of students, it comes out to about $7,800.
All funds?
Everything, right.
Okay.
Actually, if I could clarify, the per pupil is that amount, and then the federal money that we get is on top of the calculation.
So
we roughly run about $2.2 million in grants to supplement our general fund budget.
$22 million, and how many students do you have?
We have, excuse me?
How many students do you have? I'm sorry.
2,800 or 2,729.
And you've got a plus $2 million federal funds, so $24 million.
Actually, I stand corrected. It's 22,000. $22 million. Now I'm getting confused.
I always get lost after the first million myself.
On our on our UIP sheets, aren't these numbers already calculated?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to yield and see if I can do the math myself to kind of answer it. I'll come back once you ask somebody else to come.
Any other questions, folks? This is the only chance, the only opportunity that we as board members are going to have not only to speak to our guests, but also to speak to our staff. So we cannot go to Brenda or Katie or Nicole and ask another question after this time period right now. So think deeply, please. Board Member Masnick.
I would like to talk to you, Dr. Robinson, and not really specific, but I would like you to talk about what UVA has done, how you feel about how the staff at Montezuma Cortez is taking to the training and your expectations going forward. Because you're going to be there, what, 2 more years?
That's the hope, yes.
Yes.
So I remember fondly our very first conversation with Superintendent Hockness 2.5 years ago, where when we inquired about the challenges that the district was facing, and we started brainstorming about what's not in place that could be in place, there's just an absolute learning mindset, and an absolute, but not a learning mindset in terms of let's completely change course and disrupt what we're doing for students, but how do we evolve in a way that honors the work we've done, but knows that it's not good enough and builds on top of that in a coherent manner? And so in terms of the work that I start there to say that as we've worked with the district team to identify their priorities, and I spoke earlier about the curriculum and assessment priority, another priority I've not spoken about is really their reallocation of resources to serve schools. The outside of Dr. Hockness's role, there was not really support that the schools would lift up as helpful for them in moving their students and moving their instruction forward. To the degree there was that support, it operated in a silo versus in a coherent manner tied to those clear priorities at the school. And so the district's willingness to not only work with each school to identify clear priorities for the 9-day plan and ensure that those were aligned with district priorities, but still honored each school's context in terms of how they rolled out those priorities to meet the needs of students, but also their willingness to reallocate and rethink their resources towards providing the support to achieve those goals. As examples, you've already heard about the weekly visits to the schools, et cetera. The curriculum instruction department, really, as they rolled out the new assessments, really invested in the data literacy of their teachers to help them understand how that data might be useful to them to actually impact learning and instruction. And I could offer other examples, but that resource allocation, getting the tools for instruction that are needed, and actually having an implementation plan to roll out, ensure all district supports match school needs. I would rate Cortez as one of the top third of districts that we've gotten to work with nationally, and their willingness to change and have a learning mindset and apply that to the work. And that's why we're starting to see the results at the elementary level. In terms of the work moving forward, we're only just over two years into helping provide teachers with these tools that they need. And we still had a 27% turnover rate in the most recent statistics, et cetera. So in order to take this to another level, we talked earlier about what are you doing to grow your own. Well, a lot of growing your own is not just the programs that Dr. Hodnes talked about, but it's also having this core instructional support work at such a high level that teachers are feeling success every single day. And why would they go somewhere else? Because they're in this profession to make a difference for students, and they're experiencing that success. And Dr. Hodnes talked about how there's still pockets like Mesa fourth grade, and we could speak about others, particularly at the middle school level, where the teachers aren't experiencing that yet. And so really a lot of this next phase of work is about translating the great work that Cortez has done to reallocate resources and establish tools and really help build the capacity for teachers to understand how to leverage that to truly adapt their instruction to meet students' needs. We're not there yet. That's happening in pockets. It's because of their investments in teacher collaboration, et cetera. Those pockets are growing every day, but those pockets are not yet endemic in terms of just how the district operates. And that's really what this work will be about on the instructional side over the next few years, but also towards ensuring that the community wraparound support and talent management strategies aren't just in isolation, but they're in support of those priorities in helping those teachers be successful.
So what experience do you have in other districts around the country that are similar to Montezuma Cortez, being rural and?
So the
have you seen this work before?
Absolutely. So in Gallup-McKinley School District, I referred to it earlier, in northern New Mexico, serves a higher percentage of Native American population than in Cortez, and very similar demographics, actually higher poverty. Of the 12 schools that we've had the privilege of working with, we've seen 10 schools rise in grade level. And we've seen of those 10 schools, four of those schools rise multiple grade levels. In Farmington, which is, I believe, within 50 miles of Cortez in New Mexico, you have Apache Middle School that's gone from a D to an A You have, oh, sorry, Tibbetts Middle School has gone from a D to an A. Apache Elementary School has gone from a F to a B. Northwest Elementary School is one of the highest gains schools in all of New Mexico over the last couple of years. And so I lift those examples not because there's not others, but because those examples are the ones most relevant because the populations are so similar to Cortez. Of course, our work across the country is not always as successful as in Cortez, Farmington, and Gallup, because our work's about building leadership capacity and building systems. And at the end of the day, you have to have leadership that is committed to the work and committed to learning for this work to make a difference. And that's why we're honored to sit here today and be part of this work, because we have confidence in Cortez's team's commitment to that work.
So, Board Member Dermer, I'm going to get back to you, but my colleague here has told me that I really should read a part of the script to make sure that it is on the record. I'm so excited that I forget what I'm doing. The board has been engaging in discussion and asking questions. Based on our 2016 board procedures, this is our only time for discussion and opportunity to ask clarifying questions of both the department and the district for this time period. We need to be sure we are clear with the direction and conditions we request to include in the proposed written final determination, as public testimony will not be heard at subsequent meeting, i.e. we need to be thinking about our recommendations for the plan that's forthcoming. Board Member Durham, are you ready with your mathematical calculations?
Well, we'll give it another try. Thank you, Madam Chair. All right, so the question I'm asking is, total all-in funding, I believe on a statewide basis, an average about between $11,000 and $12,000 a student. That's everything from categoricals to transportation to state share, local share, federal. So I get up to 8,571 by adding the federal in, if you figure 2,800 students and $2 million federal. Are you including categoricals in your original $22 million? Transportation, READ Act, everything that comes separately.
No. Sure.
No. Okay. So offhand, you don't know the total per pupil expenditure in the district, including lunch programs, and I mean, I'm just trying to get a kind of a per pupil expenditure number.
I would need to get that information and provide it for you. I'd be glad to do that.
All right, thank you. I think I'll move on then to some of the other questions. Brenda, was the answer to Ms. Rankin's question, the value of the grants, $270,000 or $2.7
million? A little over $2
million. So a little over $2
million. $2.3
million. So, okay. So over about on an annualized basis, that would appear to be about 5% of the of an addition of about 5% of the budget numbers. And can you
I was adding three different school
years.
All
together. Oh, so you were adding three. Okay. Okay.
This last go around, I think it was $685,000.
Okay. Thank you.
So
Brenda, could you tell me, most of those private grants, are they federal government grants, state grants? Can, off the top of your head, I don't need a complete breakdown.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. Yes, it's a mixture of state and federal. Say off, offhand, mostly federal.
Okay.
The state counselor core grant is a state-funded grant.
Okay, thank you. Then starting through some of the issues, Ms. Agnes, can you give me your opinion of the effectiveness of the Better Alternative Licensure Program? Do you believe those teachers that are going through that program are effective as a general rule and approach the effectiveness of traditionally licensed staff?
There is definitely a learning curve with the Better Program, because you're having a person that has a degree going into a classroom and learning the educational component at the same time. I can tell you that out of the last 2 years with the Betcher candidates, there has only been one Betcher candidate that we've asked not to to continue in our district. In looking at the ratings for them, obviously, I can say this globally because we have quite a few, they have been partially perfective. So I really do feel that the capacity is there to grow the teachers through the Betcher program. I can definitely assure you that we can tell within the first year from observations, student achievement data, progress monitoring, whether that teacher would be successful in the school district and whether we decide to continue our partnership with that teacher.
So as a general rule, they should get better over time, and most of them are in the relatively early phases of being employed by your district. Is that fair? And they haven't been there 10 years. They've been there 2 years, three years.
No. And the learning curve that I referred to is actually in year one, quite frankly. The Betcher program does a very, very intense strategy, I would say, on how to get these individuals to the point to where they could be effective teacher. Normally with the Betcher program, they do a very nice job in lining up the content areas, too, that the teachers apply for. So I would have to endorse the Betcher program, quite frankly. What we do on the other side as a district is we have the teacher leader mentor, and we have specific strategies that we push in for additional support for these teachers that we have in our classroom that has not gone through the traditional teacher education program.
Okay. So you're satisfied with the progress of that program and feel good about it?
Yes, I am very satisfied with the program. I feel like it's very beneficial to our district.
Thank you. So now you have two charter schools, is that correct?
We have three charter schools in our district.
So there are, Children's Kiva Montessori, is that a charter?
Uh-huh. We have Battle Rock Elementary School that is also a charter school. Okay. And then we have Southwest Open Charter School. That's our alternative education campus for high school students.
So generally those would appear to be performing well, with the exception of the Southwest Open Charter, which has the priority improvement as a general rule, correct?
Yes, Battle Rock has improved in accreditation ratings.
Right. And I'm going to go from memory, but a few years ago, did you guys have a bond issue to try and help Southwest Open Charter, and it failed by a few votes? Is
yes.
My memory good on that?
That is correct.
And then subsequently, have they been able to receive some funding for improvement of the physical plant at Southwest Open Charter? Am I my memory good on that or not? I mean, as I recall, they had leaky roofs and all kinds of challenges. And does that still persist, or has there been some progress?
There has been progress within that.
I'm trying to remember. I can't remember whether they got money from someplace or...
They have a capital campaign.
I think you're right. I mean, I know that the roofs have been fixed, and I'm not absolutely sure, but I believe you're correct.
Okay, good. And so a part of this improvement plan has to be then focused on Southwest Open Charter, and would it be fair to say that these are students that, as a general rule, face probably greater challenges than the average students in terms of poverty or other factors that would tend to weigh on academic success?
Yes, with other risk factors, absolutely.
So as a general rule, higher risk students, but...
Yes, needs additional intensive support to be successful.
Okay, great. And thank you very much. I'm sorry. Dr. Robinson, your fee for the services you provide, if I saw that correctly, was $213,000. Is that per annum or per the period of the contract?
That's for the period of contract.
So a little over $100,000 a year for the 2 years?
If you were to divide over 2 years, we're also hoping to provide services this April through June, which is included within that. So across 27 months, yes.
Okay. So... And that is that inclusive of travel? I mean, is that an all-in number?
It's an all-in number for our travel. and our consultants travel to serve Cortez, as well as all room board materials when they're receiving the leadership development. Not included in there is Cortez's travel to University of Virginia.
And do you have an estimate on the number of trips and how significant a burden that might be on the district budget?
To the University of Virginia, through this program, mm-hmm. we will have school administration and key district administration that will be helping support these schools travel to the University of Virginia twice through the program. And then the University of Virginia also comes to us with targeted professional development, on-site assessment and monitoring. And then we have a mid-year retreat that is usually in Albuquerque to help offset the cost of our travel.
Okay. And then, Dr. Armstrong, I've at least read a couple of articles produced by University of Virginia Department of Education that I would characterize as hostile to charter schools. How do you view your ability to assist charter schools in being part of this improvement plan?
So the majority of our direct role with Cortez is focused on accountability for the Pathways Plan and leadership development for the district leadership team and the middle school and the high school that's a direct-run school to help those schools achieve great success and move forward their instructional infrastructure, and as well as helping the district leadership team execute on its commitments outlined in the Pathways Plan. So we will not be working directly with any of the charter schools, but what we will be doing is ensuring that the district leadership's commitments in its board work, as well as its community engagement, which will serve those charter schools, is done at a high level, and those commitments are followed through on. And so we are in support of all of Cortez's schools and believe that this plan will advance learning in all the schools. Our role particularly will go much deeper in accelerating learning in the middle and the high school.
Okay. The Ms. Huggins, could you identify, just in your opinion, and other than funding, since we don't know the exact amounts we're dealing with, but if you had to go back to 5 years and the 5 years that the school has been on the clock, in your opinion, what are the three most significant reasons for the district underperforming statewide averages, just in your opinion?
Consistent Tier 1 instruction would be one of them across the board. The second one would be reflective on that instruction and assessing where the students currently are and then adjusting right at that moment in time, because as you can see, we have many challenges in our district and we really need to be reflective immediately if we need to make adjustments in instruction. I would say the third one that we really had to look at was, I felt in the past as a district, we were really focusing on what we could do to change with students and increasing student achievement, and that has completely a shift to student achievement is an adult issue. It is not a parent issue, and it's not a community issue. It is a school issue. So how do we adjust our adult actions to improve the student achievement in our district? And you'll see that reflected as a change in our UIP.
Okay. And do you, in the implementation of the READ Act, you test in English?
Yes, we test in English.
Thank you. And let's see here. I think maybe I can get from staff some of the budget numbers when we're done. You've been working, it looks very, at least would appear very effectively with CDE. It's probably, since they're sitting here, wouldn't be a good place to ask you if they had room for improvement, but perhaps at some time when this proceeding comes to a conclusion, I think it'd be interesting. First, I'd just like to hear your observations of CDE and how they've worked with you and how you feel about it, and just in general.
And I would feel it entirely comfortable to go on record with this. The work with CDE actually started well before the last 3 years. It was whenever we dipped in our accreditation rating. And CDE and the different departments, especially the district improvement department, has been incredibly supportive to our district, quite frankly. As you'll see from the grants that we have received, they're very targeted and they're very specific, and all of them line up with our UIP. Through the work with the CDE, like I referenced our UIP, we received work help with our UIPs clear down to the initiatives that we have and the grants that we need to apply for in order to move our district forward. One of the things I appreciate is Commissioner Anthon's visit to our district. That's the first time, to my knowledge, in like 15 years we've had a commissioner come to our district. I know it's not easy to get to our district. But when she came in, as we walked through the schools, I would stop and say, what you see happening in the classrooms with our teaching is funded by general fund. The rest of this is funded by federal and state grants. And quite frankly, we couldn't move the district forward than what we currently can if we didn't have the support of the State Department, both in those factions. The other component is with through Peter Thurman's improvement division with Nicole Monet, they have been highly effective and supportive in the work that we've done with the turnaround, and quite frankly, very reflective, but also very quick to respond in the support that we've had. And in addition to the pathway work that we've had before you today, this has really been a work of progress, not only at our with our district, but also with the State Department, because it's been sent to the State Department like 3 times for approval. So I really feel like the partnership we've had with CDE has been very strong and very supportive.
Thank you very much. I would just observe, I think this has been a very good presentation. The district, I think, has accepted responsibility. There hasn't been any whining. I think they have a plan to move forward. We never know whether what really ultimately works in improving education. Sometimes some things seem to work and they won't work at the school district next door for whatever set of reasons. But I think that you all, by accepting responsibility and having a plan to move forward, have acquitted yourselves and your constituents very well. So thank you.
Thank you. It's a team effort. I'd like to acknowledge everyone on the team, from the Board of Education to everyone sitting here and at home. It truly is a team effort.
Thank you.
Board Member Flores.
I just have one question, and that is, you've identified that you have adults that need to change, and these are teachers, and now you're focusing on Mesa Elementary School, and you say that there hasn't been enough growth with those individuals or with the students at Mesa. So what is the next step, and what other issue do you see needing to be changed so that going forward, you can progress?
Okay. With Mesa, it was a lack of growth at fourth grade, and so we're being very strategic and pushing in support. This is also a situation where we have brand new teachers at that grade level. One of the things that has happened at Mesa, and this has actually been through some strategic visits that we have conducted over this last year, quite frankly, up to the Denver area. When you live in our area, we have very dedicated teachers. We have strong plans, but sometimes you have to get outside of the area to see potentially what can be and what some other specific strategies we can do. And so we've actually been conducting very targeted visits to high poverty, high achieving schools in the Denver area. And one of the components that has came, and that was also funded for Mesa through the Connect for Success grant, one of the things that had came from that is a flooding concept that really helps when you have a very large tier one that's lacking specific skills. So for one of these, they call them bright spot visits from the Mesa teachers. The Mesa teachers came back, presented to the rest of the staff, and so they started out in first grade flooding, and that's where you look at the data using the Dibbles data in this case and STAR data, and you identify what specific strategies that the students need to work on, and then you conduct mini units around it, and then you take all of your staff, your extra staff, and you flood that classroom for that amount of time. That meant that other teachers had to give up support, so it was really a school-wide initiative. And so that has sent, that that happened right before Christmas, and so now kindergarten's doing it, and third grade starting to start this initiative. So it's actually turning into a school-wide momentum. And so that's a couple of things that we're doing to address it, but I really do feel that these bright spot visits are very important for our staff, and it's all tied to their 90-day plan, so it's very strategic what they come up to Denver or to another school and look for, and then how can they bring that back, and will it work for that school to replicate, and if yes, how are they going to achieve it?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Board Member Masnick?
I'm wondering what kind of vocational technical, I think you talked about CTE somewhat. I'm hearing a lot of interest, not just in Colorado, but across the country about a renewed interest in vocational technical training and when it comes to the high school level and dropout rates. And I'm just wondering if you have thought about that kind of program to try and retain some more of your students.
I would love to answer this question, but out of complete respect, I'm going to ask for Dr. Jason Wayman to come up and talk about the CTE.
Here he comes. Yeah.
And the reason why I'm doing this is because under Dr. Wayman's administration at the high school, we have one of the state acknowledged CTE programs in the state of Colorado. So, Jason?
Just in our last student perception surveys, we ran a survey for what CTE and career tech ed classes our students most wanted to see. Number one was college prep. They don't feel like the kids that are going college-wise, because we serve so many free reduced lunch students, that their families are adequately preparing them. So we are adjusting to put in a college prep program. Number two, they asked for building trades. We don't have a strong building trades program. So we are currently in partnerships with Habitat for Humanity and contractors across our county to put in internships for our kids, because that's one of the things they're asking for. Number three was more health services. We have a very strong EMS fire science program that's one of the models across the state, but they wanted more nurse aid and stuff like that, and Southwest Community College of Colorado is just outside of town and has partnered with us in SWOS and is going to send in an instructor to our campus to provide those classes next year. We can provide the numbers and they can provide the teachers, so we're good there. And number four was that they agreed that most of our programs are very strong. The community college comes in every spring and advertises all their programs, so we've doubled the enrollment in our welding programs, in our auto program, in our cosmetology, and all of those were partnered very strong. Actually doubled my budget, and I wasn't planning for that, so I'm trying to figure out how to solve that problem. And also in the last 5 years, our graduation rate's also gone up, but we've doubled the amount of concurrent ed that our kids are enrolled in through different programs. The HLC changed the requirements and took away some of the teacher credentials we had, so we've switched over to the CLET program so that our kids do not lose out on college credit programs. We're also partnered with CEI and their AIMS initiative, which is to get more American Indians, and we're also partnered with the tribe to recruit kids to get them, our Native American students, more diversity in those programs so that it matches our school diversity. So we're definitely making those trends and trying to shut those gaps and focused on it very heavily.
Jason, what percentage of the high school students are in CTE classes?
48% of our kids are in CTE that are Native American, and 10% in our AP concurrent ed. So those are definitely something we're trying to ramp up and make and match to what our students are wanting, so that they feel like high school education is provided for them. The other switch that we're going to make next year is that we're taking our advisory, which is traditionally by grade level. So we put all our freshman advisors together. We're going to switch that to academic career path advisors so that students go into a advisory based on the career path that they want to. We're coupling that with mentoring programs, so the freshmen will be with juniors in advisory based on the career they want to go into, because dropout prevention has CTE and mentoring as the top two things to prevent dropout. So we're definitely trying to align our programs to what the research says.
Thank you.
So hopefully that answers your question.
Very encouraging.
Thank you, Board Member Masnick, for asking the question that I had. But I wanted to know whether your alternative education school participates with you, has its own program. You go by the initials, and I have lost them.
They do have a new director, and they are working to, because our CTE programs are so strong, they're working to be able to send their kids over to our programs.
Okay.
They have also had the college in, and for the first time this year are now sending kids out to the community college in their programs, so that's part of the AIMS initiative that we've been involved in. Two out of their three kids are actually pulling an AB average that they celebrated for their students that are attending. So we're trying to work closer with us and with the community college to bring that piece in. It has been missing previously.
That's great. Were you finished?
I am.
Board Member Goff, somewhere out there in the ether, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Do you have a question? Do you have any questions?
Well, first of all, I want to let you all know I've heard every word, every stellar word. I'm very much enjoying your report. The work that you've been doing is highly appreciated. I would like to tie back into the CTE question just a bit in relation to how the ICAP, Individual Career and Academic Planning mechanism, have you been able to take advantage of that? And do you see some definitive advantages coming from that? And that leads then to maybe a follow-up around the your participation in the counselor corps program, if that has supported that in relation to it in any way, and if you are looking forward to having both the counselor corps sustained and continuing work with career plan in particular.
In terms of the ICAP, we revised that this year to become more of a process in our school instead of a hoop to jump through. So one of the things that we had to do was take the new graduation requirements that we're going to adopt based on the state recommendation. I'm a big fan of those, because they're pretty much, the way I'm selling it is that what we're asking is that bags are packed to go wherever they want when they graduate from high school. That's the goal. And then how do we work backwards through the way that we support our kids to be able to get there? And traditionally, the ICAP was a hoop to jump through just to get there. And so to add on to the graduation requirements, in each box besides the test score, we've added the elements that we feel are necessary to help them get there. And so that then when we have our academic tracks and our advisors are working with kids, they know that these things are not just hoops to jump through. They're actually graduation requirements, like the, you know, your career interest inventory, your resume, your graduation skills. And so we've worked with backwards design from the graduation requirements all the way down to freshman level, and then we're going to work to partner with the middle school to make sure that is a process and more of the culture than just something that we do. The counselor corps has helped. We traditionally had, when I first got there, we had two counselors and we had a post-secondary counselor. We have switched now. We have four grade level counselors so that we can kind of carry that same counselor with students over 4 years, and it's not such a high ratio. I think our last ratio before we switched was about 350-1 or something like that, 300-350-1 counselor to student ratio. It was very hard to meet the needs of the students. So with this, we have about 180-1, so it cut it in about in half of our students would be able to get counseling and more RTI services and other things like that, with the counselor focused on meeting the kids of the students. So that's really helped us meet the needs of more students and get their schedules and their plan of their four-year plans of education lined out more in line with what their needs, because they can get more personalized attention with the Counselor Corps grant.
Great, thank you. May I do a follow-up?
Please, the floor is yours now.
I can start off with the answer to that question, and then Jason can finish. One of the components that the School Counselor Corps grant that has enabled us to do is to actually bring parents in and have assistance in filling out the FAFSA. We have many first-generation parents, and I'm going on my third student completing college, and I still struggle with the FAFSA every year. And so a lot of times in helping specifically a few other students that along the way that just need some help, because as educators, that's what we do. The FAFSA can basically be a determination whether students go to college or not. Just that one barrier in our community because of the complications that parents have in filling it out, or that it doesn't get filled out, and then the continuation of that. And the School Counselor Corps has really provided that opportunity to assist the parents in filling out the FAFSAs, and that has been a very strong support to our students.
Thank you.
And go ahead, Jason.
I do know that with the decreased load on the counselor, I don't know about bringing. We have had an increase in bringing community into the school, but I know that our outreach towards parents and providing communication and support for kids has definitely increased because we have reduced number of kids, and because the counselors are staying with the kids for 4 years, it's definitely created a stronger bond with our parents and the school in terms of support. I also know that with us expanding our career in tech ed, part of that is having an advisory council that's made up of parents and community, and those involvement, and many of those are growing. So we've had more businesses and more parents involved in advisory meetings in terms of the programs and what we're offering and what they want to see. So that's helped on that end as well.
Madam Chair. Oh, sorry, Jane.
Jane, go ahead.
I'm finished for now. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was just going to ask, we do have our school finance expert here. If you are interested, we can have Leanne M. come up.
To answer.
To clarify Mr. Durham's questions.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Ms. M.
Thank you. The way I understood the question is how much revenue is coming into the school district from all sources of funds?
For all sources and for all purposes.
Okay, thank you. For the total program via the School Finance Act, that provides about, and I'm looking at 15-16, yeah. That is just a shade over 18.7 million. The state share of that is 5.2 million, and the local share of that is 13.5 million. And then the other state funds that's available to the district for categorical programs and some other ancillary type state funds, 1.4 million. And then the federal dollars that come into them for title programs, National School Lunch Program, and the IDEA, things like that, 2.3 million. So all that total was right around 22.4 million.
Nice job.
Their per pupil revenue for the School Finance Act is right at $6,964.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. M. Folks, any more questions? Board Member Rankin, could I have a motion, please?
Based on today's hearing, I move that the department and the district work together to submit a proposed written final determination regarding a management partnership for Montezuma Cortez for the State Board's consideration, the April State Board meeting.
That's a proper motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have 2 seconds. Ms. Cordial, could you call the roll, please, and remember our phantom?
Board Member Durham?
Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
There was a yes there.
She's turned on. Board Member Masnack?
Yes.
Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes. So, folks, thank you very much. This was a great discussion, great presentation. The only problem was we didn't take a break, so some of us are in deep pain. But so I'll excuse everybody really quickly. But I want to sincerely thank you for all the hard work that's gone into this.
Well,
and best wishes.
I appreciate the board and the board's consideration in taking out the time today to hear our proposal and approving it. So thank you.
You are very, very welcome. We love your kids. Take a break, guys.
Thank you.
Take a break. Pound the gavel. I don't know. I mean, I've thought about this.
Hi. Thank you so much.
How you doing, Ms. Cordial? Are we ready?
I don't.
Maybe.
Next item on the agenda is recognition of the 2016 Millikan Educators. Commissioner, I'll turn this over to you.
Yes, hello. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board, our esteemed guests today. We are pleased to be honoring the 2016 Colorado Millikan Award winners. It's an incredibly difficult and challenging honor to receive. And Colorado is lucky enough and honored enough to have 2 Millikan Award winners this year, which is very, very unusual across the nation. So. With this, I'm going to turn it over to Lynn Bamberry on our staff, who has been working with them over the past several months.
Madam Chair and members of the board.
Lynn, can you speak right into it?
Is that a little better?
Not very much. You have to come real close.
Okay.
There you Thank go. You.
All right. This morning, we're going to honor Ms. Jenny Schmaltz and Ms. Felicia Casto, our 2016 Colorado Millikan Educators. I'll give you brochures about the program, but let me give you a little background on the award. The Millikan Educator Award provides recognition and an unrestricted financial award of $25,000 to exceptional elementary and secondary school teachers, principals, and specialists who are furthering excellence in schools throughout the country. Each year, exceptional educators are considered without their knowledge by a blue ribbon panel appointed by the Department of Education. Jane Goff generously served on our panel again this year and was able to attend one of the announcements. The recipient is caught unaware with news of their $25,000 award, which they can use in any way they choose. The announcement is made during a surprise assembly that's attended by students and peers, as well as federal, state, and local officials in the media. This year, Colorado is fortunate to not have one, but to have 2 Millikan educators. On October 26, Jenny Schmaltz from Elkhart Elementary in Aurora, Colorado, was named the 2016 Colorado Millikan Educator. Executive Director Colleen O'Neill helped to present this award with Lowell Millikan from the Millikan Family Foundation. Ms. Schmaltz is a third grade teacher and coach at Elkhart Elementary. When the school needed a new instructional coach for literacy, Ms. Schmaltz stepped up to the challenge. Elkhart Elementary is a K-5 International Baccalaureate school serving the Aurora community. Most of the teachers she supports saw classroom growth averaging 65% or above, despite multiple challenges in the student body, which included parent deaths, learning disabilities, and a high percentage of English language learners. Now, we thought we would show you a small clip from the ceremony so you could kind of enjoy it too.
Thank you.
I am so excited to be here with you today, and I love seeing all of your smiling faces out there. I've heard so much about the many great things that you are doing here at Elkhart Elementary School. I wanted to come today to tell you how proud we all are of you, each and every one of you. You have certainly been working hard on your studies, and it really shows.
I've come to your school to present a Milken Educator Award to a teacher who represents compassion, dedication, and a belief that every child can succeed. And that teacher is Jenny Schmaltz.
Second recipient. On Monday, February 13, 2017, Ms. Felicia Casto from Rimrock Elementary in Fruta, Colorado, also received the 2016 Milken Educator Award. Commissioner Katie Anthus helped present the award along with Lowell Milken. Ms. Casto is teaching students at Rimrock Elementary a new language. She's teaching them to speak math. At the Enrichment Center in Rimrock, Ms. Casto works with students in grades kindergarten through five weekly, before and after school or during the day, and also coaches Rimrock's teachers. Because of Ms. Casto, both students and teachers have embraced a growth mindset, taking on challenges and constantly looking for ways to improve outcomes. And improve they do. Most students who work with Casto show a year's growth or more, and the school's reading and math scores rival the state averages. I want to show you a short video clip of her ceremony.
It's my privilege to work here. I come here because of the wonderful, fabulous children every day, and of course the teachers as well. It makes it wonderful to have such a family around that cares and loves each other so much, and we're all about the kids and helping your life and enriching that every day.
I think it's important to build the entire pipeline of our education profession. These kids will see that excitement and see that we honor and revere our teachers, and I want to have them see that so they grow into our next generation of educators.
The recognition is...
Right. So now, Commissioner Anthus or Board Member Goff, would you like to say anything, and then we'll invite them up to say a few words to you.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to see the culmination of this, but it really doesn't end anywhere. I think, you know, one of the beauties of recognizing fine teachers and their contributions should be ongoing, and I trust and hope that in your school communities that is the case, and that you continue to allow your work to inspire others, whether they be current teachers, whether they be those young kids who are looking forward to the guidepost of what is a great way for me to spend my life and give back. One of the best things about this is the ability to attend one of the announcement ceremonies, because if I'm right, that is a true surprise to you, and congratulations to your staffs for keeping it so securely quiet. I find that amazing and something very difficult to do. But I just want to say that as we go through our challenges as a state, and we're all looking to work together for the betterment and the bettering of everyone involved, having strong, inspirational classroom teachers who get up every morning with the intent of making joy out of the day for someone else is key. And I appreciate, I thank you. I'm sure the board I speak on their behalf. Thank you for being the emissaries and the ambassadors that you are for the best thing that can happen to a child, and that's school. So thank you and congratulations.
Thank you. I really can't top what Board Member Goff just said, but you know, I do just want to extend my sincere thanks really on behalf of the whole state of Colorado and teachers around Colorado and principals around Colorado. We know that behind good teachers are good principals as well, so we're thrilled to have the principals here with you today. But it was an honor and a pleasure to be at Felicia's ceremony and to get a tour of their whole school and everything like that, and Jenny, to meet you and get to know you. You both are role models for teachers around the state, and we're thrilled that you're in Colorado.
So now we'll have Jenny Schmaltz come up and say a few words.
I just want to begin by recognizing how much of an honor it is to be recognized by both Milken and the Colorado Department of Education. The Milken Family Foundation is really committed to elevating the profession of teaching as a whole, and through my short experience with them already, I've really been impressed with the caliber of teachers and professionals that I've met through there. And it's just, I'm very appreciative and humbled by the recognition and the chance to be a part of the foundation. After you get the award, it is a total surprise, and then they ask you to give a speech. And as I'm sure you guys have already noticed, I'm super great at giving speeches. So I thought to myself, you know, the only way I was going to survive that part was to speak directly to the students. And what I said to them is that you achieve great things when you surround yourself with greatness. And so to that end, I would be remiss if I didn't mention how important the guidance I've gotten from my principal, Ron Schumacher, and the amazing staff and the community at Elkhart as a whole. Through then, I've really found an opportunity to find my voice and to engage in the service of the community that I serve. And I'm very passionate and excited by that. I'm grateful to Milken and to the Board of Education here at CDE for the work that you do around Colorado, because I definitely believe in education as the equalizer for all of our students. And the Milken Family Foundation says that the students are our greatest natural resource. They are the future, and I appreciate your support in that sentiment as well. I'm very, very proud to be a representative of Colorado for the Milken Family Foundation. So, thank you.
Now we'll introduce you to Felice DeCasto.
I too agree it's much easier to speak to children. So, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the board. What an honor it is to be here and to be recognized in front of such a distinguished group of people. I want to start off with a quick little story about the day, and then I'll share a little bit about my position and what I do at Rimrock. February 13th, not too long ago, was such a crazy day. It was a short week. It was Valentine's Day. We had parent-teacher conferences. And on top of that, we had an assembly that I was put in charge of after I threatened to take the day off work because I didn't feel I needed to be there. So as these ladies have suggested, when they came in that day, I was the first person they saw. I was, you know, had canceled intervention groups and was just trying to greet everybody and, you know, put a smile on my face, like, we don't have instruction to do right now, but that's okay. And needless did I know that I was not listening as well as I should have been during the presentation, because I was put in charge of taking care of the children, because I do know all of the children at the school, mostly by name, unless if I'm having a bad day. So it's very, it was very humbling to hear my name, and I really didn't know what I had won, because I was shushing children and having them, you know, be respectful, here we go, let's listen. So it was very, such an honor. And I didn't even know until later at lunch when sweet little Bonnie, who works with Milken, said, Felicia, the money is yours. And I just thought it was the school's, that the school had won an award, not really
understanding what was really going on at that moment. So anyways, the week started off flustered, but it ended up amazing, and no idea that it was going to change my life, as it has, because it has definitely definitely given me the validation of what our school and our district and our state are working towards. We're going in the right direction. We're moving forward. It's all about the kids and what we can do to support each other, and it's very important that we are recognized, and this foundation has stepped up and honored us, so it is a huge honor. My days at Rimrock as an instructional coach, also as interventionist, mostly mathematics, just because that's what I was so bad at growing up, and I figured I needed to get better at that, and so that's where my career has led me. I want to thank as well my administrator. She has pushed me a lot, and the assistant principal as well, who couldn't be here with us today. I would not be where I am without them pushing me and continuing to challenge me, and our staff and our district is very supportive, and obviously the state is as well. So it's such an honor, and thank you.
We commend you both for your exceptional work as a model teacher and congratulate you on receiving the Milken Award. And I'd like you to please join me in honoring Jenny Schmaltz and Ms. Felicia Castro, the 2016 Milken Reward recipients. If you'll come forward and have your picture taken and receive your awards.
The board will break for lunch and start back up at 1 o'clock for the Julesburg Accountability Clock hearing.